This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, thank you for staying tuned. I'm Wong Xiaoning and this is The Morning Run with Philip C. It has just gone past 7:20 in the morning. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of March. And in about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Datuk Sri Alexander Natalinghi, who is the Minister of Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs and also Gabungan Parti Sarawak Secretary General on Sarawak, obviously. But in the meantime, let's talk about gig workers. Because this week, we've been covering the Employees Provident Fund performance, as well as how it might need to evolve with the country's social protection needs. But today, we're taking time to look at those who might not be covered by EPF, and that is the gig workers.
Yeah, so while there are schemes like iSaraan, which are intended for self-employed workers to contribute to their retirement, reportedly less than 10% of all self-employed Malaysians contribute to it. This is important because the size of the gig economy has been growing for some time. The think tank, The Centre, has estimated that pre-pandemic, Malaysia has between 250 to 300,000 gig workers. And the challenging economic conditions brought on COVID-19 pandemic has drawn more people to it, especially if they've lost their jobs or are seeking extra income. This means that there could be a substantial number of Malaysians who may be ill-equipped for retirement or simply to face a rainy day.
So for a view on how to address this, joining us on the line is Nell Omar, Research Director at The Centre. Good morning, Nell. Now, in light of the pandemic, many people who have been impacted by job losses have turned to gig work to tide themselves over. But of course, is there then the risk that they will suffer from a lack of economic mobility or skill loss by staying in these jobs, even if the job market eventually recovers?
That's definitely a risk that people will get stuck, especially if the economy recovers slowly. Or, and this is the other thing, if the economy recovers in a different way than people expect. So, for example, if some jobs don't come back, since you know many companies are digitalizing, or if companies switch to taking on contractors rather than full-time employees. So those are the downsides. But we also can't discount the possibility that some people may want to stay on doing gigs and explore other types of self-employment rather than go back to full-time employment.
So now the EPF has introduced withdrawal schemes for those in need, right? Such as iSina and iLestari. But such a small portion of small employed individuals, which include gig workers, actually contribute to EPF. So what's an ideal social protection system for gig workers?
Yeah, it's a tough one. So there are two issues here. One is enrollment and the other is contribution. And I'll just speak on enrollment since it's the basic prerequisite and it's a much less complicated problem. If you look at how things are structured today, it's clear that from the low take-up rates that expecting self-employed people to enroll themselves into EPF or SOXO or EIS is just not going to work. So campaigns to encourage sign-ups are also going to go only so far, right? Making things quote-unquote mandatory is also tough because enforcing it on the ground is very costly. So I think that what we really need is to bite the bullet and move away from incremental measures like these to long-term solutions, especially if we expect that there's going to be more and more self-employed workers in the future. So as a long-term solution, for me, it makes sense to auto-enroll everyone of working age with an IC into social protection schemes. So not just EPF, but also SOXO in EIS. So think of it as the IC number also being a social security number. Right. This way, you can avoid relying on people's personal initiative, which, if you look at behavioral studies, it will show you that it's not the best way to get high take-up rates on anything that is voluntary.
Now, other than EPF, are there any other gaps that gig workers face, like, health insurance, for example?
Actually, there's a plethora. Health insurance, emergency savings. I think retirement, health insurance, emergency savings, those are the major ones that gig workers as well as other self-employed workers need to get into.
Yeah, and recently the government announced the Malaysian Digital Economy Blueprint, which includes a Gig Up program to better equip gig workers with skills. What is your take on how effective this program might be, especially since the initiatives rely on the employers signing up with the Gig Up program?
Yeah. First of all, it's great to have a national program that sets out to reskill or upskill gig workers and self-employed workers. And honestly, I think that having companies sign up to the program should not be too much of an issue. If I do have a question or concern, it's more on how the program will be run. So the My Digital Blueprint mentions that the subsidized training, it will be on online platforms like Coursera, Udemy, and the like, right? So these learning platforms are great, but we have to bear in mind that most of the courses are in English. They benefit learners who are quite self-directed and who know how they will apply the courses. So for a program that wants to target gig worker reskilling, for that program to be effective, I think you would really need to understand that demographic, what kind of learning modality they prefer, what kind of skills they want and can apply, and so on, right? So until you get a good understanding of the demographic, you're not going to get the outcomes that you envision.
And in some cases, there may be a mismatch between the gig workers and employers' interests, whereby the employers might prefer to invest in training for permanent employees, for example. So, I mean, what can be done to align the interests of everyone involved?
Right. Well, actually, I think given the scrutiny, right, that this topic and this sector is currently under, I actually think that companies are more incentivized than people assume, especially the larger ones. But yeah, I mean, speaking of aligning interests, one of the things that I've come across is companies, including gig platforms, taking on something called Fair Work Charters. So it's a commitment that they take on to signal to their customers, as well as government regulators, right? Their commitment to fair gig work principles, which includes things like training and fair pay.
In the UK recently, the Supreme Court rejected Uber's argument that it merely acts as a booking agent for drivers and that drivers should be classified as employees, not contractors. And a similar fight is paying out in California. Do you think classifying gig workers as employees, giving them holiday pay, sick leave, etc., would be a silver bullet for them?
Okay. So I think that landmark Supreme Court decision, right, in the UK, it classifies only one group of one company's e-hailing drivers, Uber, right? But it doesn't classify all of them as employees because there are certain conditions that have to be met. And I'm saying this because it's an important factoid to point out because this classification issue is not straightforward, right? It's a question that needs its own show probably. But my simple answer is, classifying gig workers as employees, it will not necessarily make things better, or even it may not even be what gig workers want, because it may result in less take-home pay. It may result in less flexibility. It may be harder for them to land a job because of higher barriers to, you know, recruitment and entry and so on. So I think what is happening currently is that we're possibly looking at things with an outdated framework, right? Instead of trying to force fit workers as either employees or contractors, I think we have to look at today's employment relationships and evolve new classifications, right? There's some good work coming out from UCL in the UK where they classify workers as employees, independent contractors, and dependent contractors based on the level of control and flexibility in their work. So I think we do need to review these definitions and classifications that we have so that we can calibrate what are owed to different types of employment relationships more fairly.
Thank you for your time. That was Nell Omar of The Curve giving us her very interesting views on gig worker and how we should actually maybe even change the way we think of it. And the reality is, it's true. Not everybody wants to be a full-time worker or a permanent employee, right?
Forever.
And employment relationships have changed. So we need to understand the nature of the work and, you know, come up with new definitions rather than full-time, part-time. You know, it's not
That's
as
right.
simple as that anymore. But I think her point in terms of, let's say, the longer-term solutions is really true. I also cannot quite understand why we never use our IC number more. I mean, there's so much national registration data out there, right? We are forced to do it. Can't we use that as a base to get everyone auto-enrolled?
Yeah, not only for EPF, but for SOXO as well, because yeah. it's such an easy solution relatively, even for the short term.
Yes. I think something that the government should hopefully look at in the longer-term basis, because more and more people are going into gig work. But up next, how to price vaccines. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.